Hey guys, this is Zeke Sky. Thank you so much for joining me on the first day of the Thoughtful Discuss podcast. Thoughtful Discuss is the home for avowed centrism and sober analysis, where thesis and antithesis are heard equally in an attempt to form a reasonable synthesis. Join me here for a sensible take on our increasingly polarized public discourse. Okay, this is my second podcast, and it is specifically going to be political. So today the big news is J.D. Vance as the pick for Donald Trump's vice president. And do we like J.D. Vance? Drum roll, please. No, we do not like J.D. Vance. He's a politically amorphous shill who has more flip-flops than I had when I worked at Abercrombie & Fitch. And it's okay to change your positions when facts genuinely change, but consider J.D. Vance's record here. He opposed Trump in 2016 and said he might be a Hitler-type figure. He endorsed him in 2020, and now he's running with him in 2024. What changed in that time while Trump was president once? I suppose there's one case that can be made that J.D. Vance saw Trump being president and realized he wasn't Hitler. That's maybe the side that he's going to try to sell. The other side to sell for Democrats would be, well, he witnessed Trump being president, and now he wants to support him. After the Capitol and after all of the divisive rhetoric and after everything that has defined the Trump presidency as sort of being symmetrical to the Trump rhetoric that defined the 2016 campaign, okay? But it's easy to see on some levels why Trump chose him. In one sense, he is a riskier pick. He is on the literal record calling Donald Trump Hitler, and we're going to get to that in a second, among other things. Someone like Glenn Youngkin would have probably been a better pick for Trump, if you ask me. J.D. Vance has only been in the Senate for 2 years, which means he's been in the Senate for less time than when Barack Obama ran his first campaign. As risky as I think this pick is, for the reasons I'm about to explain, I think what it indicates is that Trump is relatively confident. But let's get into some of the facts here. J.D. Vance was born in 1984, which makes him only a couple years older than me. Well, on one hand, it's nice to see someone my age, actually, or around my age, doing something while I'm mainly deliberating on whether or not to dye my beard hair. Okay, he is, in some senses, an American success story. He was born in Middletown, Ohio, and he was mainly raised by his grandparents, who he has really wonderful things to say about. And he graduated from Ohio State University and was in the Marine Corps, and then he went to Yale Law School in 2013. He came to prominence through a memoir in 2016 called Hillbilly Elegy, which describes his upbringing in the Rust Belt area and his struggles with poverty, drug addiction, Appalachian culture. I don't want to say he was drug addicted, but he saw it. He became a New York Times bestseller, and that book was later made into a film, and it attracted enough press during the 2016 United States presidential election, where he soundly defeated the Democratic nominee Tim Ryan in the Senate election in Ohio. He was initially completely opposed to the candidacy of Donald Trump, and let's talk about that for a second, because I have the exact quote here. He sends a text message to one of his old friends, one of his old buddies in 2016. My brother sent it to me this morning. Here it goes. Quote, but I'm not surprised by Trump's rise, and I think the entire party has only itself to blame. We are, whether we like it or not, the party of lower income, lower education white people. And I've been saying for a long time that we need to offer those people something, and hell, maybe even expand our appeal to working class black people in the process, or a demagogue would. We are now at that point. Trump is the fruit of the party's collective neglect. I go back and forth between thinking Trump is a cynical asshole like Nixon who wouldn't be that bad, and might even prove useful, or that he's Hitler. How's that discouraging? End quote. So part of what he says here is actually really, really interesting. He says that Trump is the fruit of the neglect that the Republican Party showed what he sees to be the base of the Republican Party. It's interesting what the difference in perception from someone like J.D. Vance is about what the Republican Party's interests are comprised of might be from your average suburban liberal mom. Another thing that really, really stands out here is that he mentions that Trump could be a sort of useful idiot. I mean, all of this stuff goes very, very deep against what the current narrative is, especially after this assassination attempt is about Donald Trump. Part of me wonders if maybe Trump thinks that J.D. Vance is uniquely able psychologically to reach out to the people who weren't on the train, but I actually don't think it's that positive. I think J.D. Vance, I'm just going to call this now, is silly putty. I think he did whatever he needed to do to get into Trump's good graces. He changed his policies. He changed his rhetoric. He changed everything about what he outwardly profess to the world so that he could become this, and the history of his relationship with Trump over the last few years bears that out. Everyone is speaking about this guy, especially on the right, that he's some sort of rhetorical Cicero. It's clear that he has a number of academic bona fides. He graduated summa cum laude from Ohio State University with a Bachelor of Arts degree in political science and philosophy, so I have a soft spot for that. I'm going to go ahead and guess this is someone that I could have some discussions with. At Ohio State, he worked for Republican State Senator Bob Schuller. He graduates from Ohio State, he goes to Yale Law School, and he has a professor who authored a pretty famous book who eventually persuaded him to write this memoir. He was also an editor of the Yale Law Journal and graduated in 2013 with the Juris Doctor degree. I've heard a number of his interviews. I keep being told that the rhetorical prowess of this guy is just something that is going to wipe the floor with Kamala Harris. I don't see it that way. I don't think he is that great of a speaker. I definitely think he's a bulldog in the sense of the way he is willing to militarize and activate his rhetoric against people that he disagrees with. He's very, very good at steelmanning the case that he was once strawmanning, or strawmanning the case he was once steelmanning. 2023, after all this has gone down, he's spent some years in the Senate, 2 years in the Senate. He shoots down a couple of fiscal responsibility bills, and he also advocates for the transferring of funds for this train derailment that happened in Ohio, which actually wasn't a popular Republican position at the time. But Trump ends up attending a gala with a $50,000 per head private fundraising dinner kind of thing for Vance in Cincinnati about 2 months ago in May. And he appeared at a lot of significant political events, and he was described as a potential running mate a little bit later that month. And probably there were people who knew a little bit about this beforehand because he had some things on his resume that were really, really diverse. He's a best-selling author. He has academic credentials and he has military credentials. He's got a lot. That can't be denied. Now, on July 15th, Trump announces that officially he is going to be the guy. He is going to be the vice president. And I'll read just a little bit from David Graham in The Atlantic. Quote, Vance brings youth and intellect to the Republican ticket. He could also strengthen the ticket in the upper Midwest, which Joe Biden must win to be reelected, although Ohio is expected to be a safe Republican state. Unlike Trump, he is a military veteran and a real product of the working class. End quote. Now, I'm just going to go ahead and state my personal opinion here. I don't think that Donald Trump necessarily just took him for those reasons. I think that Trump is seeing this guy as a bulldog. He's seeing this guy as a standard bearer for Trump's policies that will do whatever Trump wants. And I guess that's maybe the guy you want to be your vice president, the guy that's basically going to be your viceroy and subservient. But really, I think what's problematic is these guys too frequently get onto the presidential stage. I don't think this is a guy who should be president. I'm not even completely convinced based on his policies that I'm thrilled for him to be vice president. There are a lot of things on this guy's record that I don't like. He used to oppose the rape and incest exceptions for abortions. Now, whether or not he actually had a philosophical inclination to oppose those things, or he was measuring cynically the voter, will have to be a question for another time. But at least that's appreciable about Trump, right? He's not necessarily a guy who's always capitulated to the will of the public. He's always sort of done his own thing, at least rhetorically. Let's talk specifically about abortion for a second with J.D. Vance. He supports the United States Supreme Court overturning of Roe v. Wade, no question there, and opposes abortion personally. He's been very, very verbal about that, and he's indicated that he might even support a federal ban on abortions after 15 weeks, similar to other nations, Norway, Denmark, and Sweden. We forget this here in the United States, that there are nations that really, really have that ban from pretty early on. I think Denmark has 12 weeks. Now, when you ask him about abortion laws and if they should include exceptions for rape and incest, as I just mentioned before, he says something like, two wrongs don't make a right. Now, at times he has specifically mentioned the antithesis of that, which has been to say that he does think that there are reasons that women should be able to have abortions, like incest, rape. But I think this could be specifically about him, this level of flip-flopping, but it's also clear that in the Republican Party, some kind of a seismic shift had happened, and a lot of people were observing Trump to see what he was ultimately going to say about abortion, and he has said to return it to the states, which has been probably a little unfairly categorized as somehow tyrannical or subversive But the truth of the matter is that this has been more, this is a pretty moderate position for the Republican Party. And a lot of Trump's base has now been pissed off by what looks like his ideological non-committal to pro-life stuff. Where is he on Israel? Well, Vance is a strong supporter of the state of Israel. That's no surprise. And he has always described the country's relationship, Israel's relationship to the United States, using the language of moral and political alignment, which is a fair case to make and a pretty easy case to make, is Israel's government and a lot of their values do align up very nicely with what goes on here in the United States. Now, he has supported strongly the funding of the Israel-Hamas war, and he has even gone after the Biden administration for depriving the Israelis of what he said was the precision-guided weapons that he has said the country needs, and basically asserts that Hamas bears the full responsibility of all civilian deaths. He's got a pretty standard right-wing position on this stuff. It's not all that interesting. I would point out to Vance and any other Republican who thinks that Joe Biden has not been extremely supportive of Israel, you're probably just wrong. And you're not only wrong in the actual ways in which he's supported them in this conflict, but Joe Biden is on the record as being one of the most pro-Israel politicians ever. I get that the words that come out of Joe Biden's mouth probably mean a lot less to people these days, but historically he's been a very, very pro-Israel guy. When you're talking about true establishment policies about Israel, it's much more homogenous than the media would make you think it is. He's been a little bit confusing about our role with Iran and how we should be treating Iran too. He said that it would be a mistake to attack Iran, even if they attacked U.S. troops. But after the nomination as Trump's running mate, he praised the assassination of Soleimani. He said, you know, basically, if you're going to hit the Iranians, you better hit them hard. And now we get to Ukraine, where I think there's going to be the most foreign policy daylight between Donald Trump and J.D. Vance. It certainly looks to me that Vance is 100% a critic of U.S. military aid to Ukraine, which doesn't make him an isolationist, but there's a couple of waves of the Republican Party that right now are for the supportings of war. Wherever stuff's blowing up, we should be sending money there. If there's people dying, we need to be sending money to encourage it. And there are some people who say we should support this conflict and not that conflict. And then there are, you know, the Ron Pauls of the world who are just like, we're not the world police. He wrote once that he voted against the package in the Senate and remained opposed to virtually any proposal for the United States to continue funding this war. Mr. Biden has failed to articulate even basic facts about what Ukraine needs and how this aid will change the reality on the ground. The most fundamental question is, how much aid does Ukraine need and how much can we actually provide? It's funny, he doesn't ask that question about Israel, and I'm not implying that aid to either of these countries should be cut off, but there are no really well-defined victory conditions for either of these conflicts, or ones that really would stand the stress test of, okay, now what? Because that's the most important question in politics and warfare. Okay, now what? You kill all of Hamas, now what? You kick Putin out of Ukraine, now what? There's always a now what question. And the now what questions about both of these conflicts are just really, really not clean. And I think everyone should be honest about that, even if you want to fund both wars. At least just say, this is an open-ended conflict, and we think that our long-term goals are served by that. That's fine. I might not agree with that either, but at least it's a more consistent position. So overall, this is not my favorite pick for vice presidential candidate. Let's say a couple good things, though. He does have a history of service. He would be the first Marine who would be a vice president. He also clearly has some philosophical background that could make him very useful in a debate. Count me in as thinking that he's not a sure thing in beating Kamala Harris in a debate. One of the reasons I say that is Kamala Harris actually has some claims she can make that appeal to the same people that J.D. Vance is bringing in here. Kamala Harris is actually on the record as being tough on, you know, doing stuff like being tough on crime. And I just wouldn't count on this just being a mopping of the floor, as many people are saying. He's a totally untested national debater. So we don't know what's going to happen in that situation. I'm going to read a couple of the story responses that I got today. As I promised, I won't be able to always get to all of them, but we'll just try one or a couple for now. Here is from, I won't share everyone's names, but it is from Jay, who is actually a friend of mine and is married to another friend of mine. He says, quote, his own vice president that he chose yesterday once literally called him America's Hitler. Yes, we talked about this today, and it's going to be an important point in this election. One of the key differences here that I will point out is he did this in a personal text message. He didn't do this on Twitter. He didn't do this on Facebook. I think it makes it easier for him to walk back, but more importantly, the second order effects of him saying this thing are going to be very different than someone who was out in public doing it. So that would be the first thing. Another message I got was from N, and N basically said that all of this talk, all of this violent talk, and all of this Hitler talk was hyperbole. And I want to point out to anyone who is interested in the nature of political language and political rhetoric, it's true that a lot of political language is hyperbole. Hyperbole tends to come with a sense of humor to it. It's not meant to indicate the real-world terra firma virtues of someone else, for example, if it's hyperbole that you joke about them being Hitler. Saying that someone actually is Hitler, or that they intend to implement policies that are Hitlerian, is indeed provoking a policy conversation. And this is what the conversation always should have been, but it never was. It was never really truly about policy. This was more about the iconoclastic nature of Trump, that he got compared to Hitler. And R flatly asked me what I thought the outcome of the 2024 election is. I'm going to say this real quick, and this is probably worth a whole podcast, but there are things that are going on right now that emotionally lead us down a path of maybe thinking that Trump has this thing wrapped up. I want to point out, Teddy Roosevelt got shot at a campaign event in 1912, and he got shot right in the stomach, and he kept speaking through it, and he still lost the election. Everything is still up in the air. Either side could win this election. I don't have a prediction. Well, I hope you enjoyed the first episode today of Thoughtful Disgust. We'll see you next time.